Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Large Nerdron Collider podcast, the podcast that's all about the geeky things happening in the world around us and how very excited we are about them. I'm Ariel Kasten, and with me, as always, is third time's a charm, Jonathan Strickland.
Yep. For a while, there were two of me on camera and two of Ariel on mic. And we don't know why, and we're still bringing you the show, gosh darn it. That's how dedicated we are.
Double your pleasure, double your fun, double mint gum. No, that doesn't work.
It's a breath mint. It's a candy mint. It's a breath. Sorry, no, that's something else. we have a show that is packed to the jams with news. So much so that there was so much news that we don't have space for a mashup. So we apologize.
Sorry.
Apologize for the lack of mashup. But it's funny because, Ariel, you know, you and I, we were putting together the lineup. And I think as late as Wednesday, it's Friday now, but as late as Wednesday this week, there wasn't a whole lot. There were like five stories maybe on our lineup, and then all geekiness exploded.
Yes, yes. So much so that, it's going to be hard to get through all of it. We'll try not to make this episode 12 hours because Jonathan doesn't want to edit that much.
No, I definitely don't. And we're going to start with a bunch of stuff that was announced on Star Trek Day, which, you know, no one told me that it was Star Trek Day, probably because I'm not a Paramount Plus subscriber.
I am, and I honestly missed it. Like, the past couple of weeks have been busy. You know that if you've listened to the past couple of episodes, but some great news came out of it. The first of which is we got an actual trailer for Picard Season 3, and it hits all of my right next generation buttons.
It's definitely leaning hard on nostalgia because it's really focusing on getting the gang back together for one last ride. This is the final season for Picard, and it's the one that has the majority of the next generation cast getting back together. There are a couple of absences. Data is not among those in the trailer, at least. And for some reason, Tasha Yar's not there.
Jonathan.
I'm only on episode two. What?
Spoiler, Tasha Yar gets eaten by a tar monster.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of the most disrespectful ways to get rid of a character ever. And it was due to the fact that, was it Denise Crosby? Is that her name? That she had, contract disputes with the studio, largely because, I mean, if you watch that first season of Star Trek Next Generation, it is not good. And
it has its moments.
Oh no, I disagree entirely. It doesn't. I think you have to wait till season two before you start getting into moments. and you have to wait till season three before you start getting into good episodes. But that's my opinion.
I mean, it's got Patrick Stewart. He's a moment all by himself, Jonathan.
Right. So Picard, Picard the series has had a lot of mixed reactions among fans. Like, there's some fans who have who are like the hardcore Star Trek Next Generation fans who object to the fact that the tone of Picard was so different from Next Generation, and that they would argue that the character Picard was so different from the version we got in the Next Generation series that it felt like it was a science fiction series that was using all these Star Trek names but otherwise wasn't at all connected to the actual original material. This feels like it's kind of trying to go back into the other direction to make it more Next Generation-y, but it's hard to judge one way or the other based solely on a trailer.
Yeah, I mean, I went into Picard, because I've watched the first two seasons, thinking that it, like, not expecting it to be the Next Generation. And I liked it. The end of the first season was just okay for me. In the middle of the second season's a bit slow, but the beginning and end were fabulous. I'm looking forward to this new part, the end of the trilogy, and seeing, like, Dr. Beverly Crusher again, because I love her and Geordi LaForge. So yeah, I'm excited about it. I can't wait to tell everybody what I think. whether you care or not.
I'm really curious because, like, one of the articles I read referenced season two of Picard as potentially the worst season of Star Trek ever, like, across all titles, not Picard.
I don't agree.
Right.
I don't agree.
Well, but I do... Like, this is hard because I haven't watched it, so I can't really make judgments. I can say that critics that I respect have said that their biggest complaint was that the Picard in the Picard series does not feel like it's the same character as Picard from the Next Generation series. And to be fair, the Picard in the Next Generation movies feels like a very different Picard from the TV series. So it's almost like you get a different Picard with each incarnation of the show or the shows that feature that character.
I mean, but if you look at, let's say you were, well, I don't know about you, Jonathan, you're pretty much who you are all the time, which is, unless you're acting, which is great. But like work me, or at least old work me, if you saw me at my old, you know, 40-hour-a-week job, that would be a different Ariel than, let's say, if you'd see me on the weekend or if you saw me dealing with a personal crisis. So I don't think it's completely unreasonable.
I think it was more about how, like, some of the characters' core values appeared to be completely different. And, like, that there is a difference there, right? Like, you could say, Oh, you know, work me, I'm totally against murder. But personal me, I'm also still totally against murder, right? That there's some things that do not change at the core.
That's true. I guess that's true. Anyhow, I'm looking forward to it, even if I might be one of the few. I'm sure I'm not, or we wouldn't have a third season. I'm sure there are many people looking forward to it. Something that most everybody I know who has Paramount Plus is looking forward to is the next season of Strange New Worlds, which is just... If you want Star Trek that feels like Star Trek, this is the show for you. It's got action, it's got heart, it's got comedy. The people they cast as the characters you know and love do a really great job of sucking you in, even though they don't look like the old characters necessarily. So I think it's a brilliant show.
Since I don't have Paramount Plus, I haven't been seeing these, but the word I hear is that, like you say, it captures the spirit of the source material, and it feels like an expansion of that spirit. And even the actors who are playing established characters, while they may not look and sound exactly like the actors who originated those roles, the way the characters are written and performed is in keeping with the way that they were first portrayed way back in the original series. And so that I feel more generous toward, because I feel like it is honoring the vision of the original series. Not that there's anything wrong with taking things in a different direction. The Abrams films show that that's a viable opportunity. But if you're wanting something to feel the way that you felt when you first started watching, say, the original series, this is more in keeping with that. And and we heard about an actor who's joining for season two, which is an interesting choice.
Yeah, Carol Kane is joining as, oh goodness, she is they just give us her name. It's Pelia, P-E-L-I-A.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what position she holds. She's shown in a red Star Trek uniform.
Supposed to be an engineer, so that's right. I don't know if she's a chief engineer, but she's definitely in engineering.
Yeah, and they say that she solves problems, this is a quote from IGN, calmly and brusquely thanks to her many years of experience. And that's interesting because, like, I know that Carol Kane can play a brusque character, but it's usually in such a comedic format, or at least the things that I'm used to seeing her in, like Princess Bride, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, Scrooged, where she can be very matter of fact, but it's always like exceptionally comedic. I'm super interested to see her in this role and see what she brings to it.
Yeah, it's also, I like the idea of kind of the no-nonsense engineering person, because when you look back on original series, you had Scotty, who was more kind of jovial and humorous. And then with Geordi, you had a character who was very capable, but it always felt like he had a sense of imposter syndrome, like he was trying to prove himself. So I like that this is another take on a character who might be, you know, instrumental in engineering. So I'm very curious to see how her character evolves.
Me too. I wish I could give you a cup of Paramount Plus, Jonathan, because I think you'd really enjoy Strange New Worlds. We have a few other Star Trek things I think we can go through pretty quickly, which is Star Trek Prodigy, which is the animated kids show that Jonathan doesn't remember being a thing, comes back on October 27th.
Yeah, again, without having Paramount Plus, it's like if I don't have it, it doesn't exist.
I mean, so to be fair, I don't remember if we talked about Prodigy or if it was like on our show notes and it was one of the things that we got cut because, you know, in previous episodes we had limited time and a certain structure. So we didn't get to cover everything we wanted to cover. But I've watched like a little bit of the series. It feels very much like a Clone Wars or something like that kind of a show, but Star Trek instead of Star Wars.
I gotcha. So not quite to the level of something like Teen Titans Go.
No, it's certainly not Teen Titans Go. If you want something Teen Titans Go, you should watch Lower Decks, which is also coming back. They've put out some trailers. You know, it's definitely an adult show, is what I will say.
Well, Lower Decks technically has already come back, but the season is continuing.
Fair enough. And I think, I don't know if it's happened yet, because I am very, very far behind on Lower Decks. It's the one that I haven't had time to watch. They're either going to Deep Space Nine, which I love because that's my favorite Star Trek property, right or wrong.
No, I think that's a totally valid choice.
Yeah, I really liked the relationships they built on the space station and the world building, and didn't care for so much for the politics or the end of the show, but I really enjoyed the journey. The other things we're getting is we're getting a prequel to The Wrath of Khan as a podcast. I tend to like scripted fictional podcasts, so I'm looking forward to this one.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of details, like we don't know who's going to be playing the various characters, but apparently this is supposed to take place in the years between Space Seed, which is the original series episode where Khan first appears, and the opening of Wrath of Khan, where it's kind of him and his crew surviving on SETI Alpha 5, the remote planet where he and his fellow crew members were set down by the Enterprise. It's kind of like a prison planet, in the sense that they can't really get off the planet. And it's very, in the opening of Wrath of Khan, it's incredibly harsh conditions. And you find out the reason why is that there was this celestial event that pushed SETI Alpha 5 into a different orbit and completely changed the environment as a result. So I'm very curious to hear about this, in that, you know, Khan is a very interesting character. He is someone who is a brilliant strategist, but he has limitations to that. And it'll be fascinating to see what kind of stories can unfold within this realm. It's the rare time where I feel like a prequel could actually expand upon the story in a way that is legitimately entertaining and not just like, it doesn't feel like a cash grab, especially since it's a podcast.
Yeah. You know, like the another great example, the Wolverine podcast.
Yes.
Were phenomenal. So if it is similar to that, it'll be amazing. Something else that is amazing is that we are getting some Star Trek Nerf gun, like official Nerf guns. We're getting a phaser rifle and a standard phaser. The phaser rifle is loosely inspired on First Contact, so they can give it some cool green patches. But the standard phaser looks like, other than its orange tip, looks like a frickin' Star Trek phaser, and I am all for it.
Yeah, it will be a one dart at a time little pistol. So the way that the article suggests is that it's the thing you have locked and loaded and ready to go when you've run out of darts with your rifle. It's not your go-to weapon. And there is no stun setting. It's just dart or nothing.
I mean, if Nerf could come up with a stun setting for their guns, I would be really impressed.
Just be a really dense, Nerf dart.
It hurts more than actually getting hit. What is up with that? Anyhow, these are available for pre-order until October 2nd. And then it looks like they're going to be released in late 2023 for about $120, which, if you are familiar with Nerf gun prices, is actually not that bad.
It's crazy to me how the Nerf form factor has evolved, because I think back to like my childhood and yeah, it's the stuff that's coming out now like blows everything I knew away easily. And it when you start to look at the engineering and in this case the licensing involved, it starts to make sense that they're so expensive.
People will take these expensive guns and they will mod them. And I know quite a few people who do, because I play a LARP where people use Nerf guns. So they'll mod them so that they've got like a added capacity or a stronger shot or more accuracy. It's really like, so they'd buy this expensive gun and then they add all of this amount of money of added craziness to it. It's actually really cool, I think.
And in case you're curious, that LARP that Ariel's referring to is an alternate Western LARP. It is not Die Hard set in Dungeons and Dragons, as cool as that would be.
Oh, that would be so awesome. Yeah, no, it's alternate, like, creepy Wild West, Weird West, I guess. And I play a monster hunter, essentially a female version of Dean Winchester from Supernatural.
Yeah, I had originally pitched an idea, which would have been a fun character to play. I just never got into it, where I wanted to play kind of a snake oil salesman type of peddler character, akin to Dr. Terminus in the original Pete's Dragon film. And I still think that that would have been a lot of fun to role play.
I agree.
But I never went much further than buying a hat and some boots.
I'm sorry that you bought those and you never came out. The game is almost over, but there are a few more of them. if you want to invest that much into just a few games.
I think I'm okay.
Yeah. But having played the game for a few years now, like, I think your character would have been a great fit. Okay. Enough personal geeking. On to our next section, which is DC stuff.
Yeah, in our lineup, I organized our stories by category, and each one is something stuff.
So this except is, for Star Trek Day announcements, and I'm going to say everything stuff.
Yeah, instead of miscellaneous, yeah. In fact, Ariel is going into our document right now and make
that. Except for I can't spell, so it became stud.
I'm all about talking about studs. Yeah, Ariel's, that's what that typing sound was Ariel doing live edits into our document as we're recording.
I'm super sorry. I can't hear the typing on my end. My headphones are that good.
Yeah, well, it'll come through on the recording. So anyway, on DC stuff, our first story. So last week we talked about how Dan Lin was in talks to potentially head up DC under the new Warner Brothers Discovery company. But apparently those talks fell through. There were just some things that the two parties could not come into agreement on. And so the search for a new head of DC continues. The current head is still reportedly going to phase out. There is going to be a new head, but they're still looking.
Yeah. You know, I'm a little sad about it. Lin seemed to have a lot of variety to his experience that might lend well to overall seeing the DC universe, but I'm sure there are other great candidates, and I'm excited to see what he does with one of the things that was kind of a stickler in the negotiations. Rideback Rise, his nonprofit, which really is looking to bring diversity to the film and television industry, with biopic creators and things like that. So I think it's a really good cause and something that he wants to focus on. And I look forward to seeing the great stuff that comes out of it.
Yeah. And, you know, we know that Warner Brothers Discovery has this hope to create a more coherent and cohesive DC universe, something more akin to what we see with Marvel, you know, which has been something I've been railing about forever, where the problem I had mostly was just that there was no clear strategy coming out of DC, that whenever a new product was coming out, you were wondering, okay, does this tie in to these other DC properties? Is it distinct from them? Is it completely separate? Is it set in a different DC universe? And the main issue I had was that it appeared that DC was trying to skip ahead to where Marvel already was, and also was trying this scattershot approach where you had various properties that may or may not be connected to the core universe. And it was the lack of transparency and communication that was really frustrating. And that appears to be something they want to address. However, that being said, we still have movies that are coming out that continue to confuse things. And that leads us to our next story, which is that there's a new full trailer for Black Adam. And this trailer has a lot more of the supporting cast featuring in it. It gives us more of a view of how the character of Black Adam is kind of an anti-hero. That comes through. And then on top of all that, it also gives us Amanda Waller, the antagonist in the Suicide Squad films.
Yeah, Amanda Waller was the odd part for me. So it's interesting because I watch Black Adam, and there are lots of characters that I like from the DC universe in it, like Hawkman, you know. And I guess the Adam, I'm not sure if that's his name, but it's essentially he's got an Adam on his chest, and he was the Adam in one of either The Flash or Green Arrow or that on TV. Anyhow, lots of characters that I like that they're squishing all into this one film. And on the one hand, like, if you look at the first Avengers movie, we got introduced to a lot of Avengers that did not have their own standalones in it. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, like, DC has not been great. They've tried to fit too much in.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it gets confusing, right? Because there's the question of, for a while there was a question of whether or not Suicide Squad fit into the Snyder universe, right? The stuff where you had Batman versus Superman and Justice League. And there were questions about, do those actually fit together or are they distinct? And ultimately you had sort of a connection there. You also had questions about Shazam, and that kind of got answered in the final little moments of the first Shazam film. And now you have this Black Adam piece with Amanda Waller as kind of this connective tissue. There are a lot of things that collectively make this a bit confusing. All that being said, this trailer for Black Adam is interesting. It is, I don't know how I feel about it, because part of the issue I have is it takes away one of the strongest tools that Dwayne Johnson has, which is that he has this incredible charisma and this incredible kind of humor to him. And the character of Black Adam lacks all that.
I mean, as far as we know from the trailers, he might grow more of a personality or more of a likable personality. I agree that's a strength of Dwayne Johnson, but I feel like what a great challenge to get people on the side of this person who is such an anti-hero.
Yeah, I think the movie will have to speak for itself. I think it's interesting also to incorporate some characters like Dr. Fate, you know, characters who I don't think the average person has really heard of or knows much about, like Hawkman more so because he's been featured in cartoons and stuff. But some of the other characters who have long been standards in the DC comic book universe haven't really had much representation on screen. So it'll also be interesting to me to see how those play out.
Yeah. It will be. I also know that they call themselves the Justice Society in the trailer, which mm-hmm. is interesting. We have one more. That's all I have to say on Black Adam. I'm moving on.
Sure. Go
we
ahead.
We have one more DC piece of news, which isn't like super big. It's that Pennyworth, it's just funny because of Jonathan's knowledge of things that don't exist. Pennyworth, a.k.a. the origin story of Batman's butler, which is the legit subtitle of Pennyworth if you haven't been following it. It's the story of Alfred, is getting a third season on HBO Max. It's kind of surprising to me because this one hasn't been getting a whole lot of press. I assumed it would be one of the ones that was cut.
Yeah, so, well, for one thing, you know, like the first two seasons of Pennyworth were not on HBO Max, which is probably why I hadn't heard of it. It's also more of a spinoff of the Gotham TV series. And that's another reason why I hadn't heard of it, is because I bounced off Gotham as hard as you can within the first season. I just, the tone and the direction of Gotham was so over the top and so much scenery chewing from everybody that it exhausted me. And I just couldn't, yeah. I couldn't take it. So I was like, I don't really care what happens, because this is nigh unwatchable for me. And I left and I never went back. And I don't know what happened in Gotham, but I know that Pennyworth is kind of a spinoff of that version of the story.
I mean, I'm in the same boat as you. I tried Gotham. It just couldn't click with me. And, you know, for anybody who enjoys it, I am super happy that you enjoyed it. They had a lot of cool concepts in there that just didn't play out well. And it's sad to me because I like spy stuff. And, you know, Alfred was kind of like an MI. Or not an MI.
Yeah, MI5, MI6.
Yeah. Before he was... I almost said Adam West before he was Bruce Wayne's butler and his man, the Wayne's butler. Adam West, if you didn't know, if you're of a generation that is unfamiliar, was an old Batman.
Yeah, and then in the 1960s series. Now I will say, if Gotham had advanced to a point where it became clear that the version of Bruce Wayne in Gotham grew up to be Adam West, I would have stayed on board.
Yeah. That would be pretty funny. Speaking of spy stuff, let's move on to our Amazon stuff section.
Oh, well, if we're going to talk about spy stuff, we'll just reverse the order of our Amazon stuff stories, which is that Amazon has long been working on producing a series called Citadel, which is a Russo Brothers production. Russo Brothers, most famous for directing the Avengers, Infinity War, and Endgame movies, and being instrumental in those. Also famous for their involvement in the first couple of seasons of Community, if you didn't know. Yeah, they were behind that. But anyway, they've been working on this big concept at Amazon called Citadel, which I like to think of it as sort of the Avengers for spies. Like, it's supposed to bring together all these spies from different nations, and then outside of that, there are going to be series produced in those individual nations that will follow those characters, that will be like native language speaking versions of the stories. And then you'll occasionally get these larger events where characters will come together and it'll be like a crossover. Very ambitious. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Amazon just loves to set that bar for most expensive streaming series, because this is the second most expensive for not so good reasons.
Yeah. Poor, it's not Left 4 Dead. Poor, what's the Last of Us? Because I know they were also vying for it. Yeah. There's just been a bunch of, like, with Citadel, there's been a bunch of, like, difference of vision and reshoots and
different.
I don't know.
Entirely different cuts, yeah. Right? Like, there's a Russo cut of Citadel, and then there's the original showrunner cut of Citadel, that showrunner had left the project at this point. So anytime you have two different cuts of the same project, it means something somewhere has gone very wrong. Either you have a director who went off the rails, or maybe you have producers who are far too, they are interfering too much. But it's almost never a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's sad because, well, I hope they figure it out, because it's a really cool concept. Mm-hmm. I tend to like the stuff the Russo brothers work on. Not, you know, not everything is as strong as everything else, but as a general whole, I like their package of work. They're like, portfolio of work. But yeah, also, I just don't get these super high budget shows for streaming services, because we've talked about in the past, like, you know, part of the reason that Discovery Plus, HBO Max is trying to cut budget is because people are still figuring out the best way to profit off of these streaming networks. So really, really high budget stuff, you know, might bring in subscribers, but if it doesn't, how do you get that back?
And how do you measure whether or not something was what brought subscribers in or not. I mean, you can look at the number of people who streamed a particular title. Like, I'm sure that's one of the metrics that everyone behind the scenes is looking at. They're looking at how many times was this streamed. And that is a kind of indication, but it doesn't necessarily correlate directly with new subscribers. So it gets really hard to nail down, you know, we brought in X amount of revenue because of these specific projects. Whereas when you're talking about a traditional film, like a cinematic theatrical release film, you can look at box office. That's a very easy way to see how well any particular movie did as far as bringing in revenue. So yeah, this is one of those things where maybe this was a big project that was in the works. I mean, it has been a big project in the works for quite some time. So you could argue that this was from that era where everybody was pouring huge amounts of money into these projects in an effort to win more subscribers. And it hasn't caught up to the post Netflix kerfuffle where Netflix started to show a loss in subscribers and the rug started to get pulled out from under all these different streaming productions. It may very well be that Citadel could be one of the last like big budget projects before things get scaled back. We just don't know yet.
Yeah. Going from the second most expensive show ever to the first, Lord of the Rings of Power series, Jonathan and I just quickly wanted to touch on this. They were, Rings of Power, I think, did a great job casting. When I look at the trailer, I haven't watched it yet, but when I look at the trailer, I find so many of the characters just like, from the moments they get to emote briefly on screen to the aesthetic that they have, super cool and intriguing. But not everybody feels that way. And that really stinks. That really sucks. But thankfully, the Lord of the Ring actors, at least all of the Hobbits, have kind of stepped up. They've been starting to wear shirts that in Elvish says, "You all are welcome here," with every color different elf ear on it, to promote and encourage diversity in casting.
Yeah. And so you've got certain bad actors, I will say, not like actors in the sense of people who are on screen, but bad actors in the sense of people who are using pretty evil arguments to justify their perspective, saying that, you know, in Tolkien's universe, it should essentially be Lily White and you shouldn't have these people of color taking on roles of characters. And my argument to that is it's a fictional universe, right? It's a universe that does not exist. It is fiction. And therefore, there shouldn't be any of that like limitation of who can play what in this fictional universe. We're not telling stories about people who really existed. You are not ruining this fantasy world by incorporating other, you know, people into your story. And the thing that really sticks in my craw is that, and I was guilty of this for a very long time. Like, I kind of fell into this trap when they announced, when there were rumors that Donald Glover might play Peter Parker and Spider-Man. I initially reacted against that because I was like, but Peter Parker's white. And that's an insidious indication of how culture starts to sculpt this idea that everything should be catered toward specifically white straight men. Like that's your default, and anything outside of that is a deviation from the norm. And the insidious thing is that is essentially white supremacy, but it's white supremacy that's been packaged in such a way that it doesn't immediately appear to be obvious to specifically white dudes. Like they just assume everything was made for them, and anything that wasn't is a niche offering.
Yeah.
That is the real underlying damaging thing about that kind of mentality.
I agree. Thankfully, we're seeing huge swaths of the geek community, you know, not in that same mindset. If you look at Dragon Con, which just happened this past weekend from when we're recording Labor Day weekend, it takes 5 minutes walking through there to see people of every shape, color, and size playing, you know, any character they want. Mm-hmm. And all of it is amazing and beautiful. And that's not to say, like, a great example, really great depictions of He-Man that are not white people, or She-Ra, or, you know, so on and so forth, that were originally depicted white. We're getting a black Little Mermaid. That is amazing and that is wonderful. These are all things that should happen, that I am glad that the geek community has such a strong voice in having make happen.
Yes, my hope is to see fewer and fewer objections to this kind of thing as more people get more enlightened and start to consider, like, ultimately, even if you sit there and say, but Tolkien would have had an all white, like, set of races just because of who he was and the time that he was creating things. Even if you argue that, my counter to you is, well, what do you think is more harmful? Having a depiction of Tolkien's world that includes diversity, which was not necessarily something Tolkien envisioned, or to deny diversity and therefore other anyone who isn't white? What is the most harmful choice there? Because I think it's obvious.
Yeah, I agree. I'm glad that casting trends continue to lean in the way of diversity and inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
I look forward to watching The Rings of Power.
Yeah, I've actually heard surprisingly very positive reviews, which is, it surprised me because when I saw the trailer, I thought it looked a little too video-ish, like the cinematography looked too much like digital video, which makes everything kind of look a little fake. And I was worried that it was just going to come across as sort of the, was it the Wheel of Time series or whatever?
Yeah.
Which did not get good reviews. And so I kind of just dismissed it, discounted it, thought like, oh, well, this is not going to be worth watching. It's just going to upset me as being a Tolkien fan. It's not going to look good. It's not going to be good. But the reviews I've heard have been pretty positive and seem to be getting better as the episodes continue to release. So I think I'm going to have to change my tune and actually watch it.
Yeah. As soon as I get done with Sandman, I'm going to watch Rings of Power. I'm doing a group watch, and that's why. So a couple of my friends and I get together and we're group watching Sandman right now, although half of them have already watched it all the way through. And then we're going to group watch Rings of Power. That being said, I totally watched the episode of Sandman that you did not want to see, Jonathan. And I absolutely did not. There was nothing about that episode I liked. Anyhow.
that's the diner episode. Yeah. That comic messed me up, man. When I read it, like, way when I was in college, I read that and I was like, whoa, this is going to keep me up at night. And I haven't seen the episode.
Apparently they pulled their punches and I felt it was unnecessary and poorly done. Maybe the concept was good, but I thought the execution was poor. But the entire show, I think the casting's great. I think it's beautiful. It almost feels like the cliff notes of any issue or episode, and it's just okay to me. Okay, on to NBC Peacock stuff.
Yeah. And the first one is a trailer you came across for a film called Meet Cute. Can you tell us all what the elevator pitch of Meet Cute is?
Yes. So Kaley Cuoco, who is, she was Penny on The Big Bang Theory. She's the voice of Harley Quinn in the new show, meets up with Pete Davidson, of all people. And kind of they hook up at a bar and get to know each other. And then she admits that she actually knows him, that she's been on the same date with him 7 days in a row or something like that. Basically, she can travel back in time and experience the same day through a tanning bed. Like, it looks like a tanning bed, but what is all of this with tanning beds having magical powers lately with Lisa Frankenstein and now with this?
Yeah, I don't know. That it is weird that there's this convergence on tanning beds being used as, like, some other form of technology. It's a little, it feels like it's a little hot tub time machine.
Yeah, yeah. So anyhow, she goes back in time and she meets him and she dates him a whole bunch. And, like, it's interesting because, unlike Groundhog Day, where you grow to like the character more and more, or Palm Springs, where a couple of people are working through the same issue together, which was a really great Groundhog's variation. This version of Groundhog's Day, like, you kind of learn about more and more bad decisions that this time-traveling woman continues to make. Like, the whole going back in history to kill Hitler dilemma, you know? And at one point in the trailer, apparently she tries to make this Pete Davidson's life better, and it doesn't. And he's like, what have you done to me? So I think it's a really interesting, like, 51st Dates, Groundhog Day, butterfly effect mashup movie. At least it looks that way.
I'll tell you what my impression was from the trailer, because when I walked away watching the trailer, part of it is that the presentation, the order of presentation of information makes it a little tricky to figure out what the actual, like, narrative is. But based upon what I saw, this is my guess. My guess is Kaley Cuoco's character went on a date with Pete Davidson at some point in her past. And then ultimately that doesn't work out. And then she sees that he is in a bad place in his life. And she determines to use this time machine to go back and start making changes to how that date happened in an effort to improve his life in her present day, like, to fix him, in other words. Because there's a scene in the trailer where Pete Davidson actually says, like, my pain isn't yours to take away. Like, it's not your job to fix me. So that's kind of what the feeling I got, is that it's this idea that she's trying to repair something from her past, and in the process is kind of making things worse unintentionally. But it's that she's coming at it through possibly selfish reasons, but ultimately, like, ones that you can understand, like, they're compassionate reasons, but it's messing things up. That was the feeling I got, but there's just enough information in the trailer to give you a chance to make up your own theory as to what this movie's actually going to be about. You just know there's going to be, like, the Groundhog Day thing of reliving the same sequence repeatedly in an effort to reach a destination that is ideal.
Yeah, it actually looks really interesting to me. Kaley Cuoco and Pete Davidson, neither of them are people that, while I've liked things that they have both been in, neither of them are people that when I see them in something, I'm like, I want to see this because they're in it. But they both seemed like really cool characters, and I want to know what's going on. So.
Yeah, it looks sweet. It looks intriguing. Like, it definitely sets itself apart from your typical romantic comedy kind of thing. Even, like, the winking naming convention of calling it Meet Cute is kind of a fun thing. So yeah, I'm actually curious about this one. It's if you had just sort of given me a very brief description head on, I probably would have said, ah, that's not for me. But the trailer, actually, I'm intrigued.
I agree. The other thing we got a trailer for on the NBC Peacock side of stuff is Quantum Leap, the Quantum Leap reboot.
Yeah.
That's a reboot.
Yeah, it is. Okay. It is. It's the same concept. It's the concept of there's this, what's set, the future part is set in modern day. That's a little different. Where it's set in 2022, where the lead character activates a technology whose purpose we don't fully understand, at least according to the trailer, but it sends him to inhabit the body of a person from the past. And just like in the original series, it's explained that his task is to do something to save that person or a person within that target's life to, be able to jump out and hopefully eventually jump back into his own body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My friends were having a giant discussion about it and how it ties into the original, and how, everybody has differing opinions of the end of the original Quantum Leap versus this one. And, it's just, I wish I could be a fly on the wall for every geek conversation around speculation for this new reboot.
Yeah, they've already changed things up because the hologram who talks with our lead character is not like this wisecracking older dude like in the original series, but appears to be the main character's love interest. He can't remember her. He doesn't have memory of his past life as himself. And so there's kind of that heartache aspect where the helper knows about their actual relationship in 2022. The lead character doesn't, and she's trying to help him get through without distracting him too much. So I don't know how much that's going to play in, how much like unrequited love stuff we're going to get in the series, but that was definitely part of the trailer.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Real quick, let's touch on some Disney stuff.
Yeah, this isn't really, we don't really have news so much as we're saying that, you know, okay, first of all, Disney Plus Day happened. Mm-hmm. Maybe you subscribed. A whole bunch of stuff hit the Disney Plus service, like the Pinocchio remake, which I watched a review of that before we recorded, and it was a pretty negative review. Like, it wasn't saying it was the worst movie, but more largely like it was completely unnecessary. It didn't add anything. The stuff that it did add didn't work. So yeah. Kind of like that critique, which is what Ariel and I both suspected based upon the trailer.
I'm sad to hear it though.
Me too. And they added Thor, Love and Thunder, and a few other
things. They changed the CGI, which also is not getting great review. I think it's fine either way as far as the CGI for that movie goes. But hey, now you can watch that, Jonathan.
Yeah, I can finally see it, and I won't know what they're talking about because I didn't see the cinematic version, so I won't know what CGI was changed.
Let me know when you have, and I'll tell you.
All right. Well, and the other thing is that, annoyingly, Disney has decided that D23 starts tomorrow, Saturday, the 10th of September, and we're recording today, Friday, the 9th of September, so we can't report on what happened until next week when all the news will be old. But
maybe it'll give us some great mashup possibilities.
It might. And we do know that they're going to announce stuff that relates to Marvel, probably some Star Wars, maybe some mainline Disney material as well. Maybe Willow. There's some rumors that that we might actually get some casting information about Fantastic Four. I think that would be premature because that's supposed to be the first film in Phase 6. And we're just ending Phase 4 now, so listen, it would surprise me.
They can't talk about casting for Fantastic Four because they haven't made me Ben Grimm yet. I wouldn't be able to talk about it, but definitively right now, I am not Ben Grimm.
Well, there's one rumor that I am hearing, which is that Jodie Comer, who was in Free Guy, she played the female lead in Free Guy, is in consideration for Sue Storm in Fantastic Four. So it's possible we'll hear something about that. Honestly, if I were Disney, I probably wouldn't do any announcements about the casting yet because there's so much other stuff to get to before you get to Fantastic Four. But who's to say?
I mean, I agree. Also, we got a lot of Marvel Star Wars news at Comic-Con too. So it'll be interesting to see what's new. I know they've kept stuff that's new, but it'll be interesting to see what.
We might get a couple of the trailers that they showed to Comic-Con audiences but did not release online. We might finally get those at D23.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's move to miscellaneous stuff. It's our last section, people. Thanks for everybody for powering through. A couple of things real quick that we don't have, but I'm just going to let you know they're out. Cobra Kai comes out today, September 9th, and Weird, the Al Yankovic story, came out yesterday, September 8th. So if you've been waiting for those, now it's your time to watch. Okay, let's get into the fun stuff.
Okay, first off, the Crow reboot, which has been kind of in different levels of development hell over the past few years, looks like it's actually moving forward. Bill Skarsgård is going to be playing the title character, who is a man who gets killed and then returns as sort of a revenant, an agent of vengeance. The Crow has been adapted. It's based off a comic book, but it's been adapted to film a few times before. And we know that they are scheduled to start shooting in a newish studio in Germany, and it's supposed to be kind of an international cast. And that's about all we know about that. But yeah, it looks like the Crow reboot is finally really going to happen.
I, I don't know if we ever needed it. I like the original Crow just fine. The Crow. Mm-hmm. I like the original The Crow just fine. But, and I think Skarsgård's an interesting choice for the main character, but I will at least give it a trailer to make any decisions on it.
Right.
Something I've made a decision on based on a teaser trailer is the Glass Onion movie. You all know that Jonathan and I were already looking forward to it, but I cannot express how much more I am looking forward to this movie now that the teaser trailer has come out. It was flippin' amazing.
Yeah, and in case Glass Onion doesn't ring any bells, this is the Knives Out 2 film. It's the sequel to Knives Out. The trailer features a bunch of people who are gathering together, apparently to do a very high price exclusive murder mystery weekend, and then a real murder happens. Everyone seems to be like the kind of person who loves to try and solve various puzzles, which just adds to that fun nature of then introducing Daniel Craig's detective character, who is a master at unraveling puzzles and getting to the nut of it. So I'm really excited about this too. Like Ariel said, we were already guaranteed to want to see this film, but the trailer really made it clear that this is going to be a fun murder mystery, not quite to the comedic levels of a farce like Clue, but mm-hmm. but more, maybe more in like one of the more fun Columbo episodes.
Yeah, I'm super looking forward to it, and I'm looking forward to my friend Kit said it's Rian Johnson does an escape room. I'm looking forward to all of the Rian. Am I saying it right?
I don't know.
I'm looking forward to all of the escape rooms that come off of this movie that I can then pretend I'm a part of and be a part of without getting murdered.
It's the guy who ruined Star Wars. We can just say that.
No, he makes really wonderful movies. It was just a different tone that people didn't want in their post-trilogy.
I said what I said.
Okay, that's fine. I love you regardless, my friend. Okay, two more news stories. Cineworld, aka Regal Cinemas and a bunch of others, is going into bankruptcy to manage their debt. Although it's interesting to me because they're saying that like their experiences, their member clubs, all these things, all of their contracts, they are still going to get paid. There's not going to be any changes there. So in my brain, I'm going, how are they going to fix things?
Yeah, this is so often we associate bankruptcy as going out of business. Those two are not the same thing. Ariel and I could tell you a lot about that if you just listen to our Business on the Brink series that we did. But, you know, bankruptcy is all about attempting to get things in a row so that either you can pay back investors as much as you can before you do close up shop, or you're trying to manage debt so that you can emerge from bankruptcy in a more stable condition and grow from there. That's the route that Cineworld is trying to do right now. And we have known that the cinematic world has been in trouble. Even before there was a pandemic, it was in trouble because it's hard for theaters to make serious profits. They do not make huge profits from ticket sales. It's from everything else that really brings in more revenue. So hopefully they will be able to navigate this post-bankruptcy world and emerge from it. Because even though I don't go to the movies anymore, I don't want to see them go away.
Yeah, I mean, and hopefully eventually you'll be able to go to movies again. Hopefully. I also don't want to see them go away. But to end our episode, because it's been a journey. On a very happy note, for me at least, maybe for you too, Jonathan, we are getting a new RPG game. It is a Monty Python RPG game called Co-Curricular Medieval Reenactment Program.
Yes, it's being presented as if it's a very serious way to do medieval reenactments when in fact it's not. It is, you know, inspired by all things Monty Python, primarily Monty Python and the Holy Grail, but also their other projects, including the original sketch series, Monty Python's Flying Circus. And the thought of a tabletop RPG that is based off of the humor and and stylings of Monty Python is really appealing to me. It's the kind of thing that you think of, you immediately want to be part of that experience, as long as you have a game master who can totally roll with it, because that is going to be absolutely key for a good game playing session with such an absurd premise.
I agree. But it's a really great change if you just want comedy. If you're a fan of watching live plays, you know, my favorite are always the ones that make me laugh a lot. I really want to play this game. There's also like a mini game in it, which is kind of backgammon based and has like dice catapults and farm animals and things like that. And I don't know. It's so ridiculous that I have to play. I hate DMing things, so I won't run a game. But by golly, I will find someone who is, and yeah, I will find some time to do it, and I will play this ding dang game.
Well, and they're going to launch a Kickstarter to fund it. That Kickstarter launches later in October, and I've also already signed up to be alerted as soon as it goes live so that I can support it, because
yes,
I am determined to at least own a copy of this, hopefully at some point actually run a game in it. But I have a feeling that this is going to be one of those cases where the source book for the RPG is going to be entertaining all by itself.
Yes, I agree. So if you're excited about the Monty Python RPG or any of the news we've talked about, you should totally write us and tell us, or just write us and tell us hi. How can they do that, Jonathan?
Well, you can scrawl a message on a piece of parchment and then wrap it up into a tight roll, tie it off with a silk ribbon, and drop it in the nearest body of water. Or you can let us know on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. On Facebook and Instagram, we are Large Nerdron Collider. And on Twitter, we are LNC_podcast.
Yes. Also, if you enjoy the show, tell your friends, share episodes, leave us a review or a like on your favorite podcatching system. All of that really helps to grow our audience and geek family, because we sure do love talking with you.
Yep, and we sure do love you listening to us.
Yes. And until next time, I have been Ariel Funny Walks Caston.
And I have been Jonathan. I'm here for an argument, Strickland. The Large Nerdron Collider was created by Ariel Caston and produced, edited, published, deleted, undeleted, published again, cursed at, by Jonathan Strickland. Music by Kevin MacLeod of Incomptech.com.